This is the Tribe and Dish Podcast,
part of the 16 Win the Ring Network.
Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
We hadn't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Part of what makes him such a good defender is his ability to switch, his ability to contest that three-point shot even when he is 7 feet away from it to run out and close out on the shooter.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than him.
And Justin Kuzite.
I know, I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
So we walk in here on this lovely morning to record this podcast. Justin got here last today. That's pretty rare.
If it's not me that's first, Justin's here ahead of me.
Yeah, that's usually because I'll come in and like prep beforehand. But I did a lot of prepping last night knowing I was like, oh man, I'm kind of excited to sleep in a little bit.
Yeah, man.
By the way, I downloaded the Starbucks app. This is not like an endorsement thing. That thing is awesome. And so I was like really excited to go to Starbucks this morning. And then I saw the time and I was like, there's no way I can make it to Starbucks and then here.
I wonder if Tropical Smoothie has an app.
They
need to have some sort of reward program because legit, I spend all my money there.
You're on like once a week at least, right? Mm-hmm.
Like I have a blender. I have the Bullet blender, so it's great, but it can only like do so much. Like I think I want to get a Ninja blender so that, you know, because then all you can do is buy the frozen fruit and then you can do it yourself. Mix it with almond milk, get some protein in there. Bam. Mm-hmm. There's a meal for the day. I don't even have to cook.
So, but we're getting off topic.
We are. This like really went left, but smoothies are delicious. I guess that is a very valid point we all can agree on. But Tim says he started talking to me about this thing called the Life of Norman. I got to be honest, I have no idea what it is. So I'm just going to let you know. Tim says he found it on Reddit.
Yep. All good things come on Reddit. Some of the titles of some of the posts involve Norman Goes to Bed.
Who is Norman, though? I guess
just a dude.
Just
like a random. Is he a fictional character or is he actually a person?
I think it's about a person that writes about his own life. Norman enjoys the movies,
but like, I guess my question:
Norman checks the time.
Is it the same Norman, or is it just like?
Pretty sure it's the same Norman. Huh. Hmm. These posts don't have a lot of comments. Norman joins a dating site. Norman listens to Eminem. Norman needs stamps.
Are there pictures?
Nope.
That's just all it says.
How did you find this?
Because it's Reddit, man.
Okay.
Norman joins a dating site one and read this quickly to you guys. It's a great story. After learning about local singles in his area, Norman's old computer had finally gone kaput, spitting out a low wheeze as the viruses overwhelmed the machine. Norman's old college roommate, Danny, now works in IT. Despite originally being in school for accounting, same as Norman, Norman thought it would be nice to hear from Danny again, to catch up on the last few decades as well as see if he could get his computer fixed as well. Norman's calf cramped horribly as he stood up from his swivel chair. Norman limped to his kitchen to see if he had any ice, only to see that he forgot about the chicken he set aside for dinner yesterday. Norman fried the chicken with a side of fries and a ginger soda. Norman wasn't normally a fan of ginger soda, but it reminded him of staying home from middle school when he had the flu.
This dude left chicken out for an entire night and then still cooked it?
Right. Longing for the nostalgia of sick days, Norman ended his night by calling in sick to work the next morning.
Oh, because he was sick from the chicken.
Right.
That went literally nowhere.
No, it's the greatest thing.
Why?
Ever.
Me and my buddy in college, we used to get like into the dark, dark, deep, dark, terrible parts of Reddit.
You don't want to do that.
But hold on. And so there's this like horror story page where like you're reading it and it's like telling you about people that like, you know, horror stories. And one of them was talking about these kids who there was an email that would go around, and if you read it, your computer would start like glitching and shit like that. And I don't know, there must have been something they put in the letter, because at the bottom it said click here to read the actual letter.
Mm-hmm.
And we clicked it, and as you're reading it, it starts like glitching and your computer starts like looking like it's shutting off and stuff. And I was like, oh my god, this is so effed up. I can't do this.
Is it malware?
Like maybe I have a virus now.
There was that text that was going around on the iPhone, so where if somebody texted you that, it would make your iPhone restart.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I loved that.
I feel like Tim did that like 9 times.
Yeah. But yes, it's the Life of Norman, short story about nothing, on Reddit.
That was really something. This has been something else. No one else is something else. It's the Driving Dish NBA podcast, part of the 16 Wins a Ring Network. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Yogi Ferrell in the cut.
He balled out.
You got to give him credit. The reason I'm doing this is the dude needs credit. He's on a 10-day contract.
32 points against the Blazers?
Yeah, hold on. I was just looking at it. 32 points, 64% field goal percentage, 11 for 17, and he was 9 for 11 from 3 with 81%.
No, it's the worst part
it's
of
legit.
This. He was in the Nets D-League team.
Oh, poor Nets. Although I feel like, is it a fluke or is it going to keep happening? We'll see.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. You get kind of these weird outbursts. It's the NBA.
Yeah. By the way, that was Josh Richardson, in case you were wondering.
Oh, yeah, Josh Richardson. Yep. They just keep on winning. So there is absolutely nothing more that you can do to help the show than by leaving us a review on iTunes. Essentially, the way iTunes works is the more reviews you get, the farther up the ladder you get. That way, when someone searches NBA podcast, you show up a little bit sooner. So for giving us a shout out, we want to give you guys a shout out. And this week we have a review from.
Yeah. And by the way, before I get into the review, we hit officially 100 5-star reviews on iTunes. So that's really tight.
And 2 1-stars that are going to be at the top, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
2 1-stars. I think we have like 3 or 4 4-stars, right?
You know what? Let's look at the advanced statistics. Let's see what we have right now. 100. This is only in America, by the way. So there's a bunch in other countries. I know there's well over 20 in Australia. There's double digits in the UK and Canada. But in America, 100 5-star reviews, 8 4-star reviews, 5 3-star reviews, 1 2-star review, and 4 1-star reviews.
How many? 3?
5.
5, and you said 1?
1, 2, and 4 ones.
4 ones.
Does anyone, I feel like I'd never rate something 2 stars.
Yeah, 2 stars is just a really weird rating.
Yeah.
I feel like you gotta go 4. Or like it's like 4, 5, or 1.
I feel like we fit 3 stars pretty fairly.
Yeah, no, 3 is like average. Yeah, 5, 3, or 1.
We are about average. I was gonna try to find our percentage, our 5-star percentage, but then as you were doing it, I messed up the math and gave up. All right, I'm gonna do that.
That's great. Anyway, the 5-star review this week. It's the title of the review is Perfecto. It's by Magic Blowy. And
okay. Oh, nice. I love that name.
Whoever you are, Magic Blowy, come forward and tweet us.
Please tell me that's your Twitter handle.
We are all 5 years old.
I'm assuming he's talking about the magic, like the Orlando Magic.
No, the fact that I hope. This review just is even funnier.
Okay, good.
The review says, very entertaining. Tim obviously knows his stuff. So, Tim.
I like to think of myself as a basketball analyst.
That wasn't the direction I expected you to take this in at all. Between this and Life and Norman, you're in left field today, man.
I'm telling you, so I guess a little preview is that we're going to be doing an NBA roundtable. And so the guy hits me up and he's like, why don't you host this? And I thought to myself,
Nope. Hell no.
No.
But we're still doing it.
Oh, we are doing it. Tim and I are going to do it.
Kevin is a really, really good host. And, right.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
You're good at saying names.
This is low-key my favorite intro that we've done in a good, 5 or 6 months, by the way.
So,
saying names.
I said I could be an analyst on the panel and let Kevy.
Yeah, Tim is going to be an analyst. There's going to be a bunch. Chris Axman's going to be on it. A whole bunch of other people are going to be on it.
Yep.
So
Justin's not, but he'll be doing the editing. So it's,
I'll just be chilling, yeah. Right.
Yeah, we have a midweek for this week, too, that I haven't told you guys about yet, too. So, it's going to be a lot of content coming for you guys.
Hey, friends, it's Joe Borelli from the Superflight NBA podcast here. If you're looking for some NBA news that's a little off the beaten path, you might want to check out the Superflight. I have great guests from around the league to talk about all the latest NBA topics. But if you're craving some art, music, and general existential nonsense as well, I got you covered there, too. Check out the Superflight podcast on iTunes or anywhere you download your podcasts. Or go to ABPN and subscribe. And thanks for tuning in. Now back to your show.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, here's your news for this week on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Yogi Ferrell signed a 2-year deal with the Dallas Mavericks after his first 10-day contract expired. The Mavericks and Ferrell are going to bypass a second 10-day contract. Ferrell is averaging 17.8 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, while shooting 52% from 3 in about 37 minutes per game for Dallas. Ferrell had been in the NBA Development League and was apparently considering signing overseas when the Mavericks requested him to fly to Dallas on January 22nd. Glad to see him back. Rumor has it that the Cavs are interested in Jose Calderon and Andrew Bogut should they become available in the buyout market. Cleveland is also monitoring Deron Williams. The Cavs have made it vocal that they probably won't be able to trade for Calderon, Bogut, or Williams given their salary cap limitations, and apparently Bogut nor Williams are particularly interested in a buyout at this point. Speaking of Cavs, kind of an old Cav player here, Anderson Varejao has been waived by the Golden State Warriors. Varejao had played sparingly for the Warriors after joining the team last season. The Charlotte Hornets plan to sign Ray McCollum to a 10-day contract. McCollum has averaged 18.2 points, 6 rebounds, and 7.4 assists in 37 minutes per game in 30 appearances this season for the Grand Rapids Drive in the D-League. McCollum played for the Pistons during the preseason this year and about 41 games last year for the Spurs and the Grizzlies. The Bulls have made it known that they are interested in a trade with the Sixers for Jahlil Okafor. Okafor is in his second season out of Duke. He is a native of Chicago. Okafor has been on the trading block for the Sixers since Embiid and Noel seem to be playing well together. There hasn't been much talk. It's just been stated that they want him. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So this is the part of the show where we want to tell you about one of our awesome sponsors, and that is SeatGeek. The smartest way to find tickets for the basketball games you want to see live and up close this season. There's nothing like being in the building for the biggest games of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. So I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's free for any iPhone or Android or any other smartphone you may have. It's by far the easiest way to buy basketball tickets, and with just a few taps, you can find seats for maybe a game this weekend or really any game for the rest of the season, even the All-Star game, if you're still trying to make that trek to New Orleans. And you know you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. So prices could vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. Every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. So if it's green, you know you're getting the best value. If it's red, maybe not the best value. And every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. No hidden fees at the end. The price you pay is the price you're getting. And best off, any Drive and Dish listener gets a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So what you got to do, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter our promo code DISH, like the dish you eat on. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first purchase. Again, it's real easy. Tim, Justin, and I have all done it. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code DISH today. So we've officially entered the month of February, which means the trade deadline is coming. Woj season is officially in full effect.
AKA turn on your notifications for his tweets.
Right. Go into the settings, click the little button. It's super easy. But you know, the bigger point that comes with that is we start to see some of these rumors going around. And the biggest player being involved in rumors so far, none other than Mr. Carmelo Anthony.
I mean, it's one of those weird situations, too, where it's like, I just, at this point, I feel personally over it. Because, like, I'm like, all right, either the guy's going to go or he's not. It's like, yeah, I understand these teams are interested, but it's up to Melo. You know what I mean? He has
to
wait.
That's why they can only really shop him to, like, 3 different teams.
So right.
You have the Clips, the Clippers, the Celtics, and the Cavs. But to me, it's just, it's not necessarily addition by subtraction.
For the Knicks,
just to get rid of Melo.
They need to get something.
Right, so they need to get something, and obviously the teams have all offered a assortment of, you know, something that the Knicks aren't really buying on. But if you are the Knicks and you have like Kristaps Porzingis, who came out and said that, quote, I think it would make life a lot harder for me on the court if Anthony was traded.
It's true.
He makes stuff easier for me.
Unless they get someone who's also a shooter. Because the problem is with Porzingis is, I mean, yeah, he's got a shot. But
well, the line of thinking is that you trade Melo and you let Porzingis become the number one on the court. You basically hand the keys of the team over to him and you build around him and just move into your next tier. And, you know, there are a lot of Knicks fans who just think they can't do that with Carmelo Anthony, who dominates so much of the offense at times. And, you know, his numbers have really began to fall off a cliff a little bit this year.
But I think what he's meaning is, you know, that initial move for the rest of this year, Porzingis is going to get just absolutely double-teamed.
Well, right. That's part of
worked.
Growing up, though. He's going to have to, like, if Porzingis is as great as we think he can be, he's going to start getting that as he, you know, matures in his NBA career. Like, there's value in getting that experience now.
True. I guess, I mean, Derrick Rose is your second option. There is other options on that team after he gets double teamed. Lee isn't a bad 3-point shooter. So, I mean, and I really do like Willie down low. I really think Porzingis and Willie are Knicks should be excited about.
Yeah, he's been one of the better rookies this year. Granted, I don't think you just get rid of Carmelo Anthony for nothing. And, you know, I think Carmelo Anthony is a guy who has really put up with a lot from this franchise over these past few years, who's been loyal to New York. You know, he's maintained a lot that I don't want to leave New York unless the franchise has decided to go in a different direction without me.
Well, and he said in general, too, it has a lot to do with his family. He's a very big family man.
That's why L.A. is a bit intriguing from a Carmelo Anthony
family perspective.
Yeah, his wife's an actress. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to uproot his kids midway through the school year, which, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So Phil's friend wrote that article essentially about Melo, but quote unquote had nothing to do with like what Phil said.
All right.
But basically saying that Carmelo's time in New York is done and everything. I think if you're the Knicks, though, it makes a lot more sense to try and move Melo during the offseason, because if you move him now, you have teams that, in order for a team to get someone like Melo acquainted into their system, it's going to take a minute. And how many teams that Melo wants to go to
can just pick it up and run?
Yeah, because, you know, to a certain extent, you kind of be honing in the season. I mean, look at how hard, for example, it's been for the Cavs just to acquaint Kyle Korver into their offense. I mean, it's really trying. So just to take this to the Cavs, for a moment, is it so the Cavs basically they have a bunch of 3-point shooters that stand on the edge, whether you're talking about Channing Frye or Richard Jefferson, whoever it is.
Smith, although he's hurt, but yeah.
Right. Well, J.R. Smith, I mean, he's a guy that can go around screens, but yeah, so he's hurt right now. But really, all of the Cavs 3-point shooters are catch and shoot guys.
Right.
And so the Cavs have had a really hard time implementing somebody that's running around ball screens because it's taking up so much more of the mental energy on the court from the person that's setting the screen to the person that's guarding the ball handler. So now that's focusing so much of the energy on the court, and that's been really difficult for the Cavs to do. And we're just talking about Kyle Korver. We aren't talking about Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
A lot of teams that would be willing to trade for Carmelo Anthony, not only do they have more cap room in the summer where they can make these moves, but they also have a full 82 games to implement him into
their
system.
And an offseason and a preseason. Well, my other thing, too, is like looking at it, at least from the fans' perspective, you know, the Celtics, the Clippers were the two that I was really looking at on Reddit, just seeing, you know, the comments and see how at least the fan base would feel about it. And pretty much both fan bases had the same thing. They're like, hell no, we don't want him. He's a ball stopper. It's not what we need. At least on the Celtics side of things, their age, I think their average age on the team is like 25. Melo's 32. He doesn't really fit the timeline of what they're trying to work towards.
See, I disagree with that.
Why is that?
Because I think that the Celtics, by getting Horford, that was an all-in move. And so I think if you're the Celtics, like you have these pieces that you've been building and stockpiling assets simply for this.
But is Melo the guy?
Right. That's the thing, is do you want to burn your assets on the guy? And the thing with the Celtics is, I understand your argument, and I do agree that I think they upped their timeline, especially with having to make the contract decision with Isaiah Thomas. But when you sign Horford, you do up that timeline. But at the same time, you know, there's a very good chance they get the number one overall pick this year. If you add a Markel Fultz or you add a Dennis Smith or a Josh Jackson type player, you can kind of have a little bit of both and still set yourself up really well for the future. I don't think you just go out and burn all your assets to get Carmelo Anthony necessarily. He has been slumping this year, and I do, you know, do I think the Celtics would be better with Melo? Yeah, but are they better than Cleveland? Do you want to, you know,
burning all their assets though? Like if the Celtics could keep that Nets pick If the Nets pick is off the table.
Sure, but what else? I mean, do you think they're doing the Knicks are doing a deal without getting that Nets pick? Then you're not getting then you're not even getting the value for Melo. So why trade him?
Because they have other picks and they also have young players. They can throw in like Kelly Olynyk. That like they have a ton of Derebko. They have a ton of players that they can throw into a deal without that
number one
that
pick
Nets pick.
But
now,
I feel
if the Celtics
like
can keep the Nets pick.
I feel like if you're the Knicks, you're looking for that Nets pick.
Well, yeah. let's say the Celtics can get Melo without giving up that Nets pick. Why wouldn't you do it?
Looking at it from a team perspective, the Celtics, in general, they're third in the league for assists per game. The Knicks are 19. I know that's the Knicks as a whole, but Melo has been the ISO guy. I think he's. I was looking at it yesterday. Taking 790 jumpers this year, 57% unassisted.
But you aren't looking. You aren't getting Melo because you're looking for a playmaker.
But
you're
guess,
getting him because you're looking for a score. You're getting him because you want. You
but
want
is that what the
four.
Celtics need? The Celtics are. They need help on the defensive and rebounding side of things right now. Am I wrong in thinking that?
No, but I mean, Melo doesn't make your team worse. And when you're talking about contending,
he might on the defensive end, depending on where you end up putting him. Like if you're putting him in place of Jay Crowder or something like that.
I just don't really know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is you wouldn't want to play Melo in you wouldn't want to play Melo instead of Jay Crowder.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could put Horford at the 5, you put Melo at the 4, you can keep Jay Crowder at the 3. And you know, most of the time like starters really only play about 12 minutes on the floor at the same time.
Yeah, there's a lot of changes. Which is that always threw me off when we first started doing the podcast was like looking at the lineups. I'll be like, well, this one's only played 10 minutes together.
Right, that's
like,
what they're playing.
That's the average amount
during a game. So when we talk about 5 starters on the floor, there's ways that they can work around it. From a Celtics perspective, they're going to be coming up on decisions where they have to extend these guys.
Well, so let me take it off this side, too. Isaiah Thomas, a guy who really does need the ball in his hands to do his work, and he's the fourth quarter killer at this point. When you have Carmelo, who also needs the ball, is that going to hurt Thomas?
They'll have to figure that. That's definitely something they'll have to figure out. Carmelo,
if they did that, yeah.
I mean, Melo's been the guy in New York. He always takes the lash. Like, it's almost become predictable to what Carmelo Anthony is going to do. And, I mean, again, you can't really knock it. He's really good at it. He's one of the best isolation players in the league. But, you know, him and IT are guys that need the ball in their hands. That is something they'd have to work out and figure out. I just think the Celtics need rebounding more than they need to add Carmelo Anthony into the mix.
Right.
Like, I think there are other ways to make that team better, and I just don't really know if Carmelo's the guy,
like
especially with his numbers are declining, that I burn some of my assets on.
I got to burn them on something eventually. I mean, otherwise Danny Ainge is just holding on to these assets forever.
They can go bad. Assets can go bad.
No, I mean, I completely agree. Like, this, I want the Celtics to do something. I'm just saying I don't know if necessarily if Melo's the right move.
So for the Clippers, they apparently offered Austin Rivers, Wesley Johnson, and no draft picks, and Crawford as well. But the Knicks don't want Crawford because he's got $45 million left on his deal, and Phil Jackson doesn't want that. But if you're the Knicks getting a package headlined by Austin Rivers with no draft picks for Carmelo Anthony.
The argument I saw, at least for I'm not in terms of the players, just in terms of the Clippers in general, in the, I think it was the LA Times that posted this, but they were talking about how the Warriors and you have the Rockets who are just like, you know, well, the Rockets more specifically like F defense. We don't need this. We're just going to outshoot you. And he was saying,
doesn't always work.
True. But he was saying if that's the way the league's going, at least in that side of the conference, adding Melo would put you in that race as well because you add another shooter to the team. You might be able to you know make some noise with that. Also, LA is a very like star heavy, you know, town. They want that one guy to hold on to. While yes, it might be Chris Paul or Blake Griffin or something like that. They had Kobe going for a while, and now it's like you bring in Melo. He's the guy. He's going to be the number one guy between the Lakers and the Clippers, and he's going to be the guy that everyone's talking about.
Well, it's an upgrade from Mba Mute.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean,
at least on the offensive end. But I don't know that the Clippers have enough to get him.
I know. I also saw J.J. Redick in a few of the trade rumors.
Clippers
wouldn't do it.
He's fourth
in the league for three-point percentage. No, like, I wouldn't mess with that.
What's the thing with the Cavs, too? Like, the Cavs just don't really have the assets to get something like Carmelo Anthony. And honestly, like, who are the Cavs going to... Like, the Cavs can't take Carmelo Anthony's salary.
Well, what the Knicks want from the Cavs is they're really adamant about wanting Love,
I wouldn't do that.
Well, yeah. Here's what's funny about this is, like, think about, like, last year, right? And mm-hmm. how everyone's like, can Love fit with this team, and what a bad fit it is. And you don't hear anyone saying that anymore.
Well, no, it also helps that Kevin Love's having his best year, too, since joining the Cavs this year. Like, all his numbers are up. He's been more engaged and involved in the flow of the offense. They've got him playing bench minutes finally as well. So, you know, Kevin Love is playing the best he has since he's come over to Cleveland. That finally looks like it's working. You know, with Cleveland's issues, which is something we're going to get into kind of here now, you can't the big three have been doing their part of it. You know, there's been, you know, a little bit of injuries and such, but, you know, you can't really be upset there. And as we get into, you know, we've all heard the LeBron comments recently. We've talked about that. It says the Cavs need a playmaker. He talked about a backup point guard. So the Cavaliers had this workout. They wanted to try out some guys who aren't in the league right now. So, like, Lance Stephenson was there. Jordan Farmar was there.
Kirk Heinrich.
Did they bring out Nate Robinson?
They had talked about it.
Darren Williams.
No, why am I blanking on it? Mario Chalmers.
Mario Chalmers. Yeah. That's right. Mario Chalmers, the one who, I mean, because he's tweeted about it, and it's the one that people have mentioned for a while, just obviously because of the Miami connection. No, Darren Williams, I think, like, I mean, if there's a way for Cleveland to get Darren Williams, you know, say he gets bought out or something by Dallas, I mean, I think that would be incredible. And I think Cleveland is in the position where they could wait. They don't have to really make a move, you know, wait till after the deadline, see if there's not something that opens up and then make your move. I mean, look, this all comes back to me is, like, Golden State is peaking right now. And I think LeBron sees Golden State peaking and coming together finally. And I think he's, like, a little worried that they're not going to have enough firepower. Like, Cleveland is going to be fine.
That's not how I take it at all.
Well, that's not, I mean, what else do you think it is? We see this every January.
LeBron James is leading the league in minutes. And you're talking about somebody that's turning 33 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot have a LeBron James leading the league in minutes at the age of 33. And I think that that's what he's looking at. I don't think he's worried about. He knows he's going to be playing Golden State regardless. I don't think whatever move they need right now, I don't think is a move for the postseason.
It's a move to have him fresh.
Right. Yeah. LeBron James cannot be playing 40 some odd minutes a game. Like, well, I don't even know why that's allowed. Like, why is management saying,
yes, let them do that?
This is okay to Tyronn Lue. It's simply not. And that's an issue with this team, is that they cannot win when he doesn't play. And they have too much talent
to not win.
Well,
right.
Not Lowry.
Irving and Love together on the court should be a winning team.
And they don't. That's the thing. Like, they simply don't. Anytime, and that's always been one of my things against Kyrie. Thank you. Kyrie Irving is that he just cannot win a game without LeBron James on the floor. Not to get into a Kyrie Irving debate, but I think that's what LeBron James has an issue with.
I mean, I can see trying to shore up the bench unit. You know, I think this team does need a backup point guard. We know when we look at the roster, you go behind Kyrie Irving and they just don't have it. I mean, Kay Felder's a rookie. Jordan McRae is unproven at best. So I understand completely. And just, like, they need to be patient and get whoever they can. You know, they're good at finding. David Griffin, I think, has done a really good job of finding these value deals. You know, going out and getting Korver this year, going out and getting Channing Frye last year, being able to go out and get J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert for cheap. You know, the deadline is approaching. I don't think the Cavs need to panic. And, you know, they've stabled out a bit. You know, I know they lost some games here. But, like, look, Cleveland is still the favorite. I just think there's so much. There's just so much drama, and it happens all the time in Cleveland, and I just think everyone needs to relax.
But it's not about panicking. It's about that LeBron James is leading the league in minutes.
Yeah, no, he needs to stop. Like, I completely agree with you. LeBron James should not be leading the league in minutes. Like, they've got to do a better job at, you know, working around that. But
should LeBron have brought it up to the world instead of just going to management? I mean, I know we're not surprised LeBron did this. Like, this is what he does.
Right.
But maybe.
I mean, no, he put the front office in a really bad spot. So out of all the players that did the workout, it looks like Jordan Farmar is the one who's kind of in the lead.
He is so, like, I do this every year in NBA 2K. I pick up Farmar with my last pick, and then I just cook with him. Like, I just.
Right, so that's what the Cavs played with him.
Do it.
On 2K, and they're like, this might work.
Make it happen.
So looking at his recent history, he played 2016, 2017. So this year he played 2 games with the Kings. Last year he played 12 games with Memphis. 2014, 2015, he played 36 games with the Clippers. Over his last 3 seasons, he has a assist percentage of 20. 27% overall. On the defensive end, he's been awful. Over the last three seasons, a negative 1.8 defensive box plus minus. Career averages of 7.7 points and 3 assists over 10 seasons. But I guess the thing that the Cavs really like is he's open to signing a 10-day contract. Apparently, Lance Stephenson is as well, whereas both Mario Chalmers and Kirk Heinrich say they'll only join the team if they get the full year. I think that the Cavs are a little bit worried about signing somebody for the full season because they only have one roster spot left. So depending on what happens
with that.
Well,
it would really suck if like they bring in Chalmers and then he hurts himself again like what happened in Memphis.
Right, and then it's your last roster spot.
Right, and then you're locked into a guy
who's
not helping.
Chalmers is coming off Achilles, too. Like, we talk about it all the time. Achilles is one of the most difficult injuries in sports to recover from. So you do have a little bit of hesitation there as well. I mean, I think if you can get guys to go the 10-day route, I'm going that way.
You know how much the Jordan Farmar's going to cost him for a 10-day contract?
How much?
Like 40 grand?
57 is the salary. You know how much they have to pay because of their luxury tax?
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
He's going to cost them $200,000 for a 10-day contract. Like, that's money. So it's if you're looking at it from the Cavs' perspective, it's not just about getting LeBron James his
rest.
About
managing the money.
You got to manage the money, and then you got to look at LeBron James, who's making sure that his friends, his Tristan Thompsons, are getting these huge deals and everything, and then you have a Cavs organization who's spending a ton of money and doesn't have the flexibility because you want all your friends to get paid.
Did you see Tristan Thompson's comments? They said, I earned my contract. It wasn't LeBron getting me that money.
Dude, I understand his value. Kevin and you and I have had many conversations.
He is his value is that he's great in the finals.
But that dude does not get better at anything.
No, I mean, he plays a role. Like, he plays a role that the Cavs need. He crashes the offensive glass. He keeps possessions alive.
Pay the kid
$25,000
for $25,000 for a rebound.
It's an important 4 games for what it's worth. Like, it's a really important 4 games.
But, I mean, think about him from the time he first came into the league until now.
Yeah.
Has he improved on anything? Like, legitimately, I'm asking. Like, is he the most stable player at not getting better at anything?
Well, hold on. We can find out through the magic of the internet.
You got to look at per 36s.
All right, where's the per 30? Okay, per 36. Actually, okay, here you go. Per 36, if you take his per 36 into account, his best year was 2012, 2013, and 2013-14. It was pretty much similar. And since then, he's gone down points-wise. Free throw percentage is down this year. Last year, all about 60%. His field goal percentage all around 55 for the past 3 years.
Let's look at his offensive rebounding percentage.
Offensive rebounding percentage all in 4.5 for the past 3.
Yes.
And his defensive rebound, literally the exact same as last year, 7.5.
That's why I'm telling you. Like, look at this guy's percent, because I think when you're looking at a player like Tristan Thompson with the minutes and things, you got to look at the percentages. It's kind of what I did with Jordan Farmer and the assist percentage. But, yeah, this guy seriously just puts up the same numbers.
I will say his
year.
Blocks are up. He's at 1.5.
But his block percentage, roughly the same.
Not up.
Well, it is a little bit. It's up to 3.4% compared to 3.3% last year.
Yeah. Before we get out of here with the Cavs, though, can we agree that I think getting J.R. Smith healthy, too, will kind of help a lot of this? I mean, they've been missing him this year. When you can't afford to really get any, like when you're lacking depth, J.R. missing those minutes, especially on the defensive end, is hurting them as well, you know, and that's forcing LeBron to play more minutes.
It's going
to
be a chemistry thing, too, because he hasn't played with Korver, so they're going to finally figure this thing out, and then J.R. is going to come back, and it's going to really be like, oh, crap, we got to get these two used to each other.
They got to get LeBron James some rest, man.
That, too?
They just, management can't allow it. You look at players' careers and their trajectories, and once they log a certain amount of minutes, it really starts.
It's the Thibs effect.
Right. Yeah. They really start to decline. If you're looking at a player as important to a franchise as LeBron James is, you want to extend that career.
Yep.
Not shorten it.
And they're shorting it.
You know, whenever you attend a basketball game or maybe you're just kicking back on the couch, you always want to look in style and the best you possibly can to show off your NBA fandom. And with that, we want to tell you about one of our newest sponsors, and that is NJETs. Make sure you check it out, NJETs.com, where you can see some of the coolest custom t-shirts, their own exclusive artwork, and you can get all sorts of your favorite players. You know, I'm on the homepage right now. There's new ones with Isaiah Thomas, Russell Westbrook, Mike Conley, and they're unique designs, so you'll have something that most fans won't have. I know I really have enjoyed my Joel Embiid t-shirt. You know, Justin had to get one too. Just all sorts of awesome designs. But it's not just t-shirts. You can get tank tops, long sleeve t-shirts, baseball tees, sweatshirts, hoodies, wall art, phone cases, notebooks, laptop cases, and mugs to show off your NBA fandom. Represent your favorite teams. Tim's representing the Suns. Justin and I, again, repping the Sixers. Make sure you check them out, njetees.com. And your friends are going to ask you next time you go to the game, where'd you get that shirt? Just tell them njetees.com. You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. And we got a special guest on the line, Tamberlyn Richardson. You can follow her on Twitter at TTOTAMS. That's TAMBZ. She's the host of the Queen of the NBA podcast. Also, Tamberlyn's Tip Off, which will be featured with us, our podcast on 16 Wins a Ring, co-editor of Thunderous Intentions, and a writer for Raptors Republic. We're going to talk Raptors today, but before we get too much into We the North and all that, we do want to talk about Tamberlyn's Tip Off again, come to 16 Wins a Ring. So for those who aren't familiar with that, I guess, tell us all about it.
Well, it was with All In Sports Talk, as many of my followers know, but they changed their formatting to all football or all soccer, depending on what part of the world you live in. It's basically an overview of what's going on in the NBA. We talk about the topical news that's going on. We do buy, sell, and wave, which means who you're buying that week, who you're selling that week, and who you're watching, keeping on waivers. It's just a fun hour of basketball. We have some fun guests on, and it's interactive, and I make bold, outrageous predictions.
We love our bold, outrageous predictions, I got to be honest. Now, do you talk about any teams, or are you Raptors-specific?
No, it's all NBA.
Okay, well, we have you here because we want to talk about the Raptors, and I'll just kind of address the elephant in the room. Right now, as of recording, they're technically in the fourth seed. So, I ask you, we're just going to come out with a really hot take. Should the Raptors be worried?
Well, there's two schools of thought on this. First of all, DeMar DeRozan has missed 6 of 7 games. The one game he came back in, he rushed his back. Patrick Patterson was out for 9 games and left again last night. Patrick Patterson is the glue of the defense. This team is exhausted. They never really recovered from that West Coast trip. Just looking at the teams that are sitting atop the East, the Cavaliers have 9 games left against the West, 7 on the road. The Wizards have 2 5-game road trips still to come on the West Coast. The Celtics have 12 games left against the West Coast. The Hawks have 12 games left. So the Raptors have 7 games left against the West, which tells you how much they've traveled already this year. So there's that school of thought to look at. But there is definitely concern. There's size concerns. There's issues with depth up front. Jared Sullinger has just started playing, so the rest has got to come off. As much as teams like the Celtics and Wizards probably don't want the All-Star break to come, nothing could come sooner for the Raptors than the All-Star break, because they need a rest. They're exhausted, and they need to figure something out. They also lost Andy Greer, who was the assistant coach on defense last season, who went back to join Tibbs in Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there should be some concerns, but on the other hand, I'll point out the fact that 3 of the games the Raptors lost were by a cumulative 5 points. One of them was in Memphis, where Gasol got a questionable call at the end to go to the line after they were kind of had a loose whistle. One of them was against San Antonio by 2 points. One was against, I think, the Suns by 1 point. So you add those 3 games up, and they were in that Boston game that Boston was rested, and they came in on a back-to-back, having played overtime, and lost by 5 points. They win those 4 games, and they're on top of the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, coming into the season, we felt there might take a little setback in terms of wins, but the ends would justify the means by the end of the year. But certainly, it's definitely got a few people paying a little bit closer attention. Ask me after Sunday, if they lose to the Nets, then they'll be blowing up the team, right?
I was going to say, it just kind of seems like the odds aren't in their favor with what you were just saying. The ball's not really bouncing their direction at the moment.
It's a combination of the team. One play here or one play there, and they win games. So that you don't want to overreact, you know, like Casey always takes the party line of you have to keep an even keel and every game matters as much as the others. It's not for a lack of trying. They've had some blowouts this year, which is uncharacteristic of the last couple seasons. And to be fair, this team has been on a roll. It's been kind of a magical era in Toronto with how the team has been performing. So for me, I'd rather see them going into the All-Star break like this than dealing with this in March or April and going into the playoffs like they did against the Wizards two seasons ago. This is a much better time for them to figure out, look, we got to get ourselves back in order and get the defense rolling. So, and address some of the depth issues. Who knows what Sully's going to end up bringing to the team, Jared Sullinger, because there's still rest there. Patrick definitely needs the rest. And Lowry is exhausted. A couple of weeks ago, everyone was talking about LeBron leading the league in minutes. Well, guess who's back on top? Kyle Lowry.
Is he officially on top?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a rough road, really, over the last two or three weeks for the Raptors, culminating with this loss to the Magic, where you have Damari Carroll, who was, what, 0 of 3 in 18 lately. Minutes, coughed the ball up three times, 0 of 2 from behind the arc. And it seemed to me going into the season, a lot of the Raptors' success was really going to depend on how healthy Damari Carroll could be, because obviously last year he was kind of battling through injury, never really quite got right. Looking at Damari Carroll this year, how's that going?
There's been glimpses where he's showing up and looked good, and you see some of that junkyard dog mentality. Right now, the thing about the Raptors is they keep a lot of stuff very close to their vest. So they don't talk about injuries. They don't talk about how bad something is or isn't. So we just learned a couple of games ago that Damari Carroll has been battling something with one of his fingers on his shooting hand. So that's affecting his shot. But it's his regression defensively and his mobility on the court that's concerning, because this guy was brought in to be the guy that went after small forwards, to be the guy that could shut down LeBron James. Like, whenever anybody calls me or goes off in a panic saying, we need to trade for Boogie Cousins, I'm like, great. Get rid of all the depth you have. One of the four or five teams that has all their picks that is the third or fourth youngest team in the NBA to get a guy who still can't stop LeBron James. What does that do for you? Nothing. So as much as there's issues up front with power forward, the real issue from my perspective is the regression of Damari Carroll, Terrence Ross's inconsistency, and another major concern is Corey Joseph, who got most of the night off last night to get back his head back around, because he's been a real issue defensively, which is just kind of mind-numbing at the moment.
Well, I guess you just mentioned Terrence Ross and his inconsistency, and really since he's come into the league, it feels like we've seen him in and out of trade rumors. He's had nights where he's looked like he's a huge part of this Raptors team now and going forward, and then he's had nights where it doesn't look like he belongs at all. I guess, you know, now that we've seen multiple seasons of Terrence Ross, where do you evaluate him overall as a player?
Well, here's the strange part about T-Ron. So some of us call him Terry in Toronto. He showed up this season, and no doubt, feeling the breath on the back of his neck from one of my favorites, Norman Powell, and he showed up and he looked like he was ready to go, and then he stupidly injured his ankle in a kind of an exhibition type fan type event just prior to the season start, which set him back. He seemed to be being more consistent. I mean, if you could transfer the lobotomized DeMar DeRozan and put it inside Terrence Ross in terms of work ethic and someone who improves every season, because Terrence Ross has all the tools. He's athletically there. He has the ability. He shed some weight to be faster this season. He has length. Ironically, he's 3 inches taller than Norman Powell, but Powell has a 4-inch longer reach, which is kind of an oxymoron. But, yeah, I mean, this last losing streak, what's been really noticeable is the fact that there's no consistency from anyone behind Lowry. So you've got nothing coming from Terrence, really, or you can't count on it. You've got nothing coming out of Damari Carroll. And to me, those two have been the issue. So it's whether or not when Damar comes back, they can get that magic back again. But, yeah, I personally think that Norman Powell has done everything possible to earn start ahead of Terrence Ross, because when he plays more than 24 minutes, he has double-digit scoring in all but one game.
Well, and speaking of
volumes, and he's a great defender.
Speaking of not really having a lot behind Lowry over this losing streak, talking about Valanciunas, who it seems like Valanciunas is a guy where for just, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, everyone keeps saying if he just gets the minutes, he's an all-star center. And you kind of look at JV this year, his advanced metrics, his per 48 blocks are down. He's, 76 in the league as far as blocks and minutes, you know, from starting centers. Defensively, he's not playing well. His rebounding is up. That's good. But apart from that, it seems like JV's kind of regressing a little bit. What's up with him? And do you think that he could be a trade chip going into this trade deadline?
I actually preseason felt that the two picks they made, Pascal Siakam, who will be great down the road, and Jakob Poeltl, who is a very similar player to Jonas Valanciunas, except he might not have the offensive upside, but he has something that JV doesn't have. You watch any Raptors game, and I beg anyone to prove me wrong. Has he learned how to defend the pick and roll yet?
JV, no.
No.
But it's not his fault, though, right?
His shoes aren't as bad as they used to be, but I will say this. His on-floor IQ has got to be the worst of any Raptors player. Like, his IQ is just brutal. And maybe he should spend, I don't know if you guys get this commercial in the States, but maybe he should spend less time on his itty-bitty ballers, because the commercial up here in Toronto, I don't know if it comes into the U.S. or not.
Yeah, I've seen the commercial.
Okay,
so
the GoDaddy commercial. So, I mean, he comes out some games and he's great. The weird part about it is, he'll arrive into the playoffs when everything slows down, and he can be great.
So is it a pace thing? They just need to slow everything down for him, and then he'll thrive.
Depends on what he's guarding too, though. I mean, he can't a lot of the fives now. You know, they're really stretching out. It seems like he can't really guard the perimeter that well either, and that's sort of an issue for him.
Traditional center.
He's more of a traditional center, and he has his moments. I mean, the guy is strong as a bull. I felt that he got a bad whistle in Boston, like getting four quick. He played 6 minutes with four fouls on touch fouls, where they were letting people go at it. So that was kind of unfortunate for him. There's some games where he comes out and he's amazing, but you would think after 5 consecutive seasons in the same system, he would understand it. So that's a concern for me. So I thought preseason that they were going to possibly dangle him and he would be the trade chip. But his contract is fairly serviceable given the position he plays. I'm on the fence on this one. Would I like to see someone like Paul Millsap come to Toronto? Absolutely. Do I think that Jakob Poeltl is ready to step into his position? No. I mean, the Raptors have to kind of play this by ear, because when Masai came in, the long-term goal, they kind of over-exceeded expectations right away. They jumped and moved ahead faster than anyone expected, and they've grown each of the last 5 seasons. So the thing is, they have all these young trade pieces and assets that continue to grow. They still have DeLon Wright. We've got 4 serviceable point guards that can play. We've got Kyle Lowry, who is everything. We've got Corey Joseph, which, if he shakes out of this defensive woes he's been in, a lot of people tell me all the time, I'd love to have Corey as a backup point guard. We've got DeLon Wright, who's very similar to a Sean Livingston in that herky-jerky type of deal. And him and Norman Powell have a very similar relationship off-court to what DeMar and Kyle have. And ironically, they're kind of like the mirror images reversed, because DeLon's tall for a point guard and Norman's short for a shooting guard. And we've got Fred VanVleet. And if you saw the game last night, that kid's like a clone of Kyle Lowry. He has the same kind of chip on his shoulder. He can hit the three. He's serviceable on the floor. I'm not sure if Masai and Casey are showcasing him, but there's no value in him because of his contract, right? But I'm wondering if they're going to get rid of one of them. I'd love to see them bring Axel Toupain in from the D-League, because he's a really great player that could add some help up in the front, especially with Demare's regression. So there's so many questions right now around the Raptors that it's hard to say whether or not they're going to shake this off. And as I said, they've progressed faster than anyone expected them to. Do you trade away the future when you have so much depth, all your picks, and you still can't beat LeBron James? Or do you grow the assets, keep the continuity, and take the Spurs approach, which is what they said they're doing.
And looking ahead a bit to the offseason, one of the biggest questions, you know, you just described Kyle Lowry as everything. He's a guy who, you know, we thought has been the best point guard in the Eastern Conference this season. We know how important he's been to this Raptors team all around, but he is up there in age, and he's going to be looking at a max contract realistically as we get into the offseason. So with the Raptors having a younger core, having depth, having assets, are you putting max money into Kyle Lowry?
Absolutely. I'll tell you why. Kyle Lowry is one of the very few players in the NBA who can change a game and competes every single game. If you even saw last night, you could tell he was exhausted. But every game you can see when Kyle Lowry says, enough, I'm taking over. I don't think he gets enough respect around the league with like when I see how Isaiah Thomas is allowed to, like how what calls he gets versus what Lowry gets. But when they talk about Isaiah Thomas in fourth quarter scoring, look behind him, it's Lowry. Look at when Isaiah Thomas sits and the team opponents score 16 points less. With Lowry, it's completely different. He's the best on both ends of the court of the guards. I think Wall would give him a run for his money because I think he's amazing, but they also haven't played a lot of teams out west, as I mentioned. So overall, I think you have to, because where's he going to go, first of all? Who's going to take him away from Toronto? The only team I could see taking him away from Toronto would be Philadelphia. And why would he go to Philadelphia when Ben Simmons is going to be the one running the point?
And as a Sixers fan, with Embiid and Simmons, and just we talk about the timeline there, it doesn't really make sense to give Lowry max money now. The Sixers are still, you know, 3 or 4 years off for competing, where we know the Raptors are at a different level now.
Yeah, and but he doesn't want to go back to that. He spent the early part of his career behind Mike Conley, going back and forth with Dragic. He felt that Masai sat him down and said, listen, you need to get rid of the chip on your shoulder. And it stemmed back to when he was a youth, and I think his father wasn't really in the picture, and then he had some issues in college with people, men disappointing him. But then he became a father, and him and DeMar became best friends. This is his team. No matter what anyone says, they can say it's DeMar and Kyle's team, but they're the yin and yang leadership duo. DeMar is the kind of guy that shows you by action. When they were in Rio this summer, he was the player getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do two workouts before the USA team got together to do their workouts. He improves every season, but Kyle is the vocal leader on the floor and the ones everyone looks up to. Who else is he going to go to? The Cavaliers won't have the money. Golden State's going to have their hands tied dealing with grandfathering Curry and having to go into their cap to sign Kevin Durant, and they still have to figure out how to bring back Iggy and Livingston, which good luck with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those two teams are off the table. I can't see a Philadelphia boy going to Boston. Just can't.
No. I was going to say, definitely with the Lowry talk in general, I know growing up hearing all the stuff about him going to Nova. I think my favorite story, though, was him. He used to go to, like, McDonald's or Wendy's, I think it was, at, like, 3 in the morning, even when he was still, like, they'd have a game the next day, and he'd still be, like, all about McDonald's.
Well, that was the thing. Fat Kyle Lowry and skinny Kyle Lowry was legit a thing on basketball Twitter for a while. He's also probably the best player to ever come out of Villanova.
Probably, yeah. The other thing about Lowry is, as much as he might be getting older, he's so smart. Like, mm-hmm. He'll be a coach one day for sure. The thing about Lowry is, remember when they sat him against Brooklyn? He came back and he was terrible. He's a player that has to play every single day to keep us flow. He doesn't, yet, I don't want to see him leading the league in minutes, but he needs to be in games. It's not good to give him days off, whereas you can give DeMar a day off and he'll come back and kill you.
Help me out here, because the All-Star voting came, and I'm looking at how it broke down, whether or not you're talking about NBA media or you're talking about NBA fan votes. And I frankly didn't understand where the debate was at. To me, Kyle Lowry is hands down the best point guard in the East. And it's not even really all that close, apart from like John Wall. But I mean, if you compare Kyle Lowry to Isaiah Thomas, your point earlier, and the defensive woes and how much better the Celtics are defensively without Isaiah Thomas on the floor, or even Kemba Walker, and definitely Kyrie Irving, the same aspect, Kyle Lowry just doesn't get the respect that he deserves as the best point guard in the East, right?
Especially his peers. I mean, I wrote an article for OKC based on what happened with Russell. But, I mean, at least that's understandable because of the brand of Harden and the brand of Curry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest shade for me was the fact that Kyle Lowry ranked so low with his peers.
Are you talking about the NBA player voting? Because that thing was a joke anyway.
Yeah, but they still got it right with Russell and James in the West.
Mm-hmm. They did.
They at least had that part right.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're putting, I mean, I get that Isaiah Thomas is doing what Isaiah Thomas is doing, but if Corey Joseph gets back to his normal self, he's not going to do that to him. So, I mean, I don't understand it. It flabbergasted to me. It was the biggest shade thrown. And the fact that the NBA pundits got it wrong, that was shocking, too.
Well, everyone just likes it. You know, I've thought really deeply about, like, why people don't appreciate Kyle Lowry as much as, let's say, a Kyrie Irving or an Isaiah Thomas or even to a certain extent a Kemba Walker. And to me, people... They really like to watch players with pizzazz is the word I'm looking for. I'm thinking like really impressive handles. So like Kyle Lowry is effective. He runs an offense. He scores well, but he's not really known for his handles. Where you watch Kyrie break somebody's ankles once a game and all of a sudden everybody thinks he's the best point guard in the East.
But he defends like crap.
I mean, I know. I completely agree. You're preaching to the choir.
The zebras, I call them the zebras, the referees. If you look at what the Zebras let Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving get away with when they play the Raptors, it is inane. Like, how they allow them to clutch and grab. Kyle can't do anything. Like,
he's a bulldog.
Gotten hit in the head and thrown around more this season than any player I've seen. And I've watched a lot of games this season, and he gets very little respect from the Zebras for that. And maybe it's the bulldog mentality. I don't know. But it baffled me that pundits who know the numbers, who can pull up the stats, who can see what his on-off-court ratings are. You know what I mean? Like, when Kyle Lowry is on the floor, the team is a plus 8.9. When he's off the floor, they're a minus 5.5.
Right, 13-point swing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that speaks volumes to me, that you can point to whatever stat you want to point at. He always is up there with assists. He's one of the best rebounding point guards, especially for his size. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I wrote something recently that talked about when Isaiah Thomas sat, teams were scoring 16 less points against the Celtics.
It's noticeable.
It's huge.
Right.
And I mean, if you watch the game against the Celtics the other night, how they let Marcus Smart defend, if we could get away with that, the Raptors would never lose.
No? the thing about IT, though, is it's not, you know, watch him defend. It's not his fault. It's simply a size thing.
Size.
But to your point earlier, I would argue that Brandon Knight gets hit more than any other player in the NBA.
How much does he flop?
No, it's not flopping. Dude just gets, like, hit. Like, watch players demolish Brandon Knight.
Hit him in the head.
Right. Yeah, that was, you know what? I took a lot of exception to that hit. Why did Kyle do that? Because you were watching the game and look, Kyle got beat on that play. And then so he hit Brandon Knight in the back of the head. I almost lost a little bit of respect.
The thing was immediately after he explained it in the locker room, immediately after he thought, because in a play prior, Knight had gone up with the ball. He thought he was going to do the same move again. So there may have been something to it at the time, but he did not mean to hit him in the head. He really didn't, because he immediately went to him. Trust me, I've seen Kyle Lowry play enough to know when he means to do something and when he doesn't. And I think he was frustrated, and maybe he wasn't thinking as clearly because he was frustrated, but he didn't go, like, headhunting.
Well, I kind of want to broaden the topic to Lowry and DeRozan. One of the things, and one of the, I guess it's a flaw, you could call it an Achilles heel if you want, but it seems like with the Raptors, they're very reliant on DeRozan and Lowry, and I know Lowry himself has a good amount of assists per game, but I think last I checked, they were 29th in the league for assists per game or something like that, and not high in the rebounding aspect as well, but they're so reliant on DeRozan and Lowry to score, and once those guys go cold or once they get defended well or something like that, the Raptors seem to have a lot of trouble winning games without those two. So let me put you in the position of coach. How would you address that, and what's your move if Lowry and DeRozan are cold or just having an off game? How do you win that game?
Well, it is a little bit deceiving, that stat, because they run a lot of their system off of screens. Mm-hmm. So if you look at those numbers, like the Raptors lead the league, I think, or in the top three for points made off of screens. So often it's the hockey pass leading to the score around a screen where they get their points. It was no coincidence that they were leading the league in offense for a good portion of the season. Mm-hmm. A lot of it had to do with the screens they set. A lot of it had to do with player. If you watch the beginning of the season when everything was still moving well, there was a lot of player and ball movement, even though it wasn't leading to an assist. So I think I really like Rex Kolanian a lot. And right now, what we're seeing without DeRozan is they're kind of falling. You can see guys looking at Kyle, almost like the Thunder end up watching Westbrook, like, what are you going to do? They're almost relying too much on Kyle. When both of them are on the floor, for some reason there's more consistency. It could just be a timing thing. I think I'd have more sets, and I think I would be using... If Jonas is getting off at the beginning of the game, then why are you going away from him in the second half of the game?
Well, with that, do you think that's, like, because you were saying a lot of younger guys, and they're just kind of letting those guys run kind of like how the Thunder do. Are you worried about developing bad habits in that aspect?
Well, there's always going to be the regression to the mean, so they're always going to go back to the habits they're used to. Having said that, Jonas doesn't get great positioning in the post a lot of times, and he pump fakes way too much. I mean, this kid... He was practicing threes the other day and hitting them at like a 75% clip. The thing is, he gets in game and he starts doing his pump fakes and he doesn't get position in the post. Slow it down a few seconds and all of a sudden he looks like, you know, a god in the paint. So, I mean, I don't really know how much of that falls on Jonas and how much of it falls on the coaching staff. They definitely are a very strong coaching staff that prepares their teams. But if you ask me at the beginning of the year who would probably get fired, I assumed that Fred Hoiberg would be on the hot seat, but after what I've seen the last couple of weeks, I think because he's a yes man to management and ownership, he'll probably have a safe job. And if the Raptors keep losing, I think Casey's in jeopardy because he may have lost the locker room, and you don't know because they keep everything so close to the vest.
You're listening to the Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar, Tamberlin Richardson is joining us right now. Make sure you follow us on follow her on Twitter at TTO Tams. So we've gone this far without talking about it, and we made references a little bit earlier in the interview, but we do want to talk about the Raptors' powered forward depth. Obviously, Paul Millsap was the initial name that was brought up a few weeks ago. A newer name that we've been seeing a lot on the trade block is Serge Ibaka, who could potentially fill the void there. So I guess the question is, you know, how would you feel about a Paul Millsap or Ibaka trade? Is there somebody else out there you might be targeting? Or is it something as simple as maybe playing Patrick Patterson, giving him more minutes?
Well, Patterson needs this rest, as we've already touched on, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he was out of the lineup, you could see how the defense hurt. That's scary a little bit in that one person can affect the team that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you talk, as far as Paul Millsap, the big joke on Raptors Republic is if I don't mention Paul Millsap or Nicholas Batum in an article, then people are like laughing because those were the two players I've always wanted to see in a Raptors uniform. The fact that Batum is once again leading his team in assists and tied for rebounds just speaks to the Swiss Army knife. Anyway, Millsap was someone I wanted the Raptors to target when he was in a Utah Jazz uniform. So that's how long I've coveted him. I don't know whether or not you give up too much to get him. That's the problem. And he will be a free agent this summer. And with the Hawks having rebounded from that terrible dip that they took early in the season, it's hard to say. At this point, I don't think that they would be shopping Millsap, but you never know what they're going to do. They turned around last year and lost Horford to bring in Howard and then openly made it known that they were shopping Millsap. So why would you as Millsap return there? Ibaka could be interesting, but again, you're investing on someone who's going to be a free agent. So unless you get buy-in from him, I mean, who's the equivalent of Rasheed Wallace? Because for me, I'm not one of those people that looks at, I don't want a Carmelo Anthony who should be playing power forward all the time anyway. I want someone who's a peripheral player that can add and be the third piece or the fourth piece, but is a good locker room guy. For me, the best trade I can remember in history last minute would be Rasheed Wallace going to the Pistons. So is Wilson Chandler someone who's not necessarily a power forward, but someone you could get from the Nuggets? Or now that they're in the playoff position, do they retain everybody? I don't know. It has to be someone who brings defense. It has to be someone that is consistently reliable and can spread the floor.
Would you in that trade also be trying to address their rebounding, or are you not too concerned about that?
Well, when Patrick's never been a huge rebounder, mm-hmm. but I'm not that concerned about the rebounding because the Raptors were up there to start the season, mm-hmm. and DeMar's really when before he got injured, his numbers were rising in the rebounding area. Okay. Kyle's a serviceable guy on the boards. We're not going to lead the league in rebounding, but one would assume because Sullinger led the Celtics last year in rebounding, right?
Mm-hmm.
So assuming Sully shakes off the rust and comes back, then we'll see what happens there. But Jonas, there's an uptick a bit, and I really like Bebe. Like, Bebe has really been impressive, and he's still growing. Let's not forget he's not that old either, and this is his first real year playing major minutes. So the core, the unit of the core is very positive. They're just missing one extra piece, and it's a matter of whether they want to tweak the power forward position or whether they want to tweak a starting power forward, or whether they want to trade Jonas Valanciunas and invest in Jakob Poeltl because he's such a similar player, or just add depth behind them. I mean, that's the big question at this point. For me, I'm concerned about the small forward position because as much as Demare Carroll can play power forward, last night there was a lineup that had Norman Powell playing power forward on the floor. Hello.
that's an issue. I have a question, though, and it's sort of a really an anomaly of basketball that I've had a hard time grasping how this happens, and the teams that I follow really closely haven't really had this problem or this issue. So if you look at the Toronto Raptors, they are eighth as far as percentage on the offensive rebounding side. On the defensive rebounding side, they're 29th. And talk to me about how a team can be.
Where are the Spurs in that?
I don't know, but the Spurs are opposite of that. The Spurs are a really good defensive rebounding team, and they don't offensive rebound at all. Okay. So what you have is the opposite effect of that. And defensive rebounding is important because it stops the offensive possession by the other team. But I'm wondering why they are so terrible at defensive rebounding but so good at offensive rebounding. Is it an issue of the guards just not boxing out, or what? How does that happen?
Well, it's twofold, obviously. When the Raptors are at their best, they're good in transition defense, they're creating turnovers, they're scoring, and when they score, they get set up on the defensive end, so they get better positioning.
Okay.
When they're not shooting well offensively, unfortunately, I think this team relies too much on their offense and still hasn't shaken that habit.
Right, but we're talking about defensive rebounding percentage, though.
But a lot of it, for me, I think the numbers have dropped because of their recent regression. So when Patrick was out, they were hurting defensively, and it affected them getting their position defensively and setting up. When they're hitting offensively, they get back, and everybody gets back and gets in position. So the numbers at the beginning of the season, they still weren't the highest defensive rebounders, but they were doing better. They were more like middle of the pack when they were doing well offensively. For some, I don't know, but maybe I'm wrong, but from my perspective, that has a lot to do with it. And Jonas, again, the IQ of boxing out, and I it's hard to say, because baby still needs to add size, right?
Yeah.
And as crazy as it seems by Patrick just missing 10 games, or most 9 games, but portions of 2 others, those 11 games, they got killed on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is transition defense and allowing the guys to get in there. Part of it is positioning in the paint. Part of it is just fight. Part of it is size. The Raptors aren't necessarily a very big team this year.
They really aren't. I've always wondered that, though, how a team can be so good at offensive rebounding and so poor at defensive rebounding.
Irony is, if you look at what Bismack did last year, he only brought 5 points and 7 rebounds. Bebe's doing as much as him, if not more.
So you don't think they're missing Biombo even a little bit?
Yeah, well, they're definitely missing him size wise.
Right.
But Bebe is stats wise, no, they're not.
Okay.
And Bebe's stopped doing a lot with shots. The difference with Bebe is he still needs to learn slides and get the lateral quicks, but he's getting better.
Well, and
with more minutes, he's getting better. They need to play Norman Moore, too. Was it a few?
Well, that's one of our Facebook questions. We posted that we were going to be talking to you the other day on our Facebook page, and Julio hit us up, and he said, why can't Casey find consistent minutes for my dude, Norman Powell?
I don't know. Go read my article on Raptors Republic. I basically said it's time to get serious about Mr. Serious, because the big joke in Toronto is they call him Mr. Serious, because he's so serious all the time, right? So if you read that article, I outlined what I talked about earlier, the fact that when he's played more than 24 minutes, and here's the irony. When Terrence Ross plays more than 24 minutes, his three-point percentage declines, mm-hmm. and his output declines. When Norman plays more, everything goes up, and he's a better defender. So you won't get an argument from me. I feel he should be coming off the bench before Ross. The problem is that he basically, in essence, is the clone of DeMar DeRozan. If you think back to when DeRozan came into the league, he didn't have a shot. Well, what was the downgrade on when Norman was getting drafted, which, by the way, is the gravy train that keeps on giving, because Grievous Vasquez got traded to the Bucks, and they'll get a pick still to come to the Raptors. The Clippers pick comes to the Raptors this year, assuming they don't implode and fall below 14th, right? That's also part of that trade for Grady and Norman Powell. So for me, he should be on the floor, but he's very similar unless you're going to move DeMar up and put him in the small forward position.
So Tamberlin, you're from Toronto. You've been following this team for a long time, so I want to switch gears a little bit and go to another one of our Facebook questions. Vincent Ho asked us this. He says, do you think the Raptors will retire anyone's jersey in the foreseeable future? Vinsanity for sure, I hope. And how about Mighty Mouse?
Well, Damian Stoudemire didn't, I don't know if he played her long enough. I loved him too, and he regrets leaving. Almost every player that left regrets it. T-Mac is like the one that changed how rookie contracts were dealt with, because he left for nothing and we got nothing in return for him. I don't know, there's still, as much as last year when Vince was here, this year he didn't play when he was here because he was injured with Memphis. For me, I don't know that you still have a lot of people that hate Vince here. There's a lot of people that hate him here. So, to me, they have to build the legacy, so we need to see his jersey going up. Anthony Davis was someone at one point I thought maybe, but then he made some really disparaging remarks when he left. Chris Bosh made some stupid comments when he left. So, I mean, DeMar DeRozan eventually, and Kyle Lowry eventually, because they've shattered all the previous marks, will have their jerseys retired. I don't think Oakley would go up, but I'd love to see it just for the pomp and circumstance of it. It's T-Mac maybe, but he spent much more time with Orlando and Houston, so it's I don't know whether they would do that. Vince, to me, I'll always think of shut it down, it's over, and that slam dunk competition. And as much as he was injured when he left here and the deal was the worst deal ever done in the history of the franchise, I think his jersey has to go into the rafters.
Yeah, half man, half amazing. You know, just so many memories of Vince Carter back in the day. You're listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuczar, Tamberlin Richardson has been speaking with us about the Raptors. Follow her on Twitter at TTOTams. Check out the Queen of the NBA podcast. Also, Tamberlin's tip-off, which is going to be coming to 16windsaring.com. Make sure you check that out, as well as Thunder's Intentions, Raptors Republic. So we always, with our interviews, we like to end it on a super fun note. And, you know, usually we come up with something creative, but I gotta be honest, one of our Facebook commenters again had a really great question, so we'll leave you with this. John Bauer asks us, are you bummed that Master P never made the Raptors roster back in the day?
I don't know, maybe we should have him and Drake line up and see what happens.
He really had a chance, though. That's what people forget. Master P really like almost made that roster.
That's kind of scary when you think about it. That just tells you how far they've come, right?
Hold on. He forgot the last part of that question. It says, hashtag, make him say, na, 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 na.
Can I just ask, what are your teams then? You're in Florida, so who do you pull for?
Justin,
Miami?
Justin and I are Sixers fans, believe it or not. We're both from Pennsylvania, oh, nice. And then Tim is from Arizona, so he's a Phoenix Suns fan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait.
Yes.
Give your GM credit for pulling off like the trade of the summer, or the the steal of the summer at the draft, because Marquise Chris would have looked pretty good in a Raptors uniform.
all I'm saying is,
is not someone I love very much.
You thought it was great that they were Sixers fans, and you said I'm sorry.
Table is down with TTP.
I mean, come on. No, no, it's fine.
Sixers are going to be the real deal. Sixers and Wolves are going to take over this league.
Never a dull moment. Tamberlin Richardson, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate this. This has been fantastic.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys. It was my pleasure.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.